answered, even in millions of ages, now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it. May we completely realize our true awakened nature.
This morning by passing around, I just made two copies. So this is from the famous Zen teacher Shel Silverstein, fantastic Dharma book called Where the Sidewalk Ends. And we'll pass these around. And actually, Kieran, since you're holding it right now, will you read this?
Sure.
Can you see it?
Yep. It's called Jumping Rope. This started out as a jumping rope. You'll probably think that I'm a dope, but this started out as a jumping rope, and now I fear there is no hope. But this started out as a jumping rope.
I don't hear that.
And there's nothing like this illustration to express it. The picture really says it. So, for those of you that have seen the picture, have you felt this way before? And the reason I chose this topic for this morning is because I felt that way quite recently. This actually came up for me in a meditation just a few days ago. And the way this went was something like I sat down to meditate like any other morning, and probably 15, 20 minutes in, I realized what I was doing. It took me that long to realize that I had wound myself up into this thought tangle, if you will, about a work situation. So I got myself all into this tangle, and it took that long to realize what I was doing. When I realized it, this was a completely new thing for me. I've never experienced this vivid of a feeling of letting the tangle untangle all by itself. So there was this realization of what I was doing, and this realization that the mind that created that tangle couldn't be the mind that untangled it. Mm. So we can't undo the mess we've created with the same hands that created the mess. Yet we try to do this, and often what ends up happening is we just make it worse, or we make it equally bad in a different way. So I realized I was doing this, and there was this very conscious decision to just stop. And it what came is such a visceral relief. I can't really explain how good it felt just to realize all I had to do was stop. And it just really loosened up. It was a wonderful feeling. So as a result of that experience, and I don't know that it would have happened without meditation, and it happened for me in a meditation. So I've been working with this over the past several days, and it's brought up a lot of really rich content for me and reminded me of that poem, and also reminded me of a couple of other things. So one was this teaching that I received from this wonderful guy named Flint Sparks. That's his real name, Sparks, who is a Zen teacher in Austin, Texas. I met him a couple of months ago, and he presented this workshop, and I can't even remember the topic of the workshop, but I did remember this quote, which I had jotted down, and then I wanted to know more about it, so I actually emailed him a couple days ago. He got right back to me and explained where this comes from. So this is a quote from Theravada teachings by Buddhaghosa. You know who this is? And it's from a 5th century manual called The Path of Purification. So this was all new to me, but the quote really stuck with me. So while the Blessed One, this is the Buddha, while the Blessed One was living in Savatthi, a deity came to him in the night, and in order to do away with his doubts, he asked this question. So the way I'm interpreting this is the Buddha was dreaming, and some version of a higher self appeared to him in a dream and he saw this as an opportunity to ask a question. So in essence, I think he's dialoguing with more intuitive, more awakened parts of himself in some way, in a dream. So this is the question he asks himself. He says, the inner tangle and the outer tangle. This generation is entangled in a tangle. And so I ask of Gautama this question. I ask of myself this question. Who succeeds in untangling the tangle? Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually neat and appropriate that there are so many uses of the words tangle and untangle and entangled within four lines, right? So I'll read this one more time. The inner tangle and the outer tangle. This generation is entangled in a tangle. This is certainly appropriate today, as much as it was 2,500 years ago. And so I ask of Gautama this question, who succeeds in untangling the tangle? Can the same hands that created the tangle untangle that tangle? And then this was this deity's response. When a wise man established in virtue develops consciousness and understanding, then as a bhikkhu is a practitioner of the way, then as a bhikkhu, ardent and sagacious, he succeeds in untangling the tangle. So what I'm getting here is practice. And it's not like we untangle the tangle and then we're done, right? Because we're human beings. There's constant creations of tangles. So another thing that this brought up for me was a recent conversation I had with one of my teachers named Melissa, also Jeannie's teacher. So Melissa is the abbot, is she the abbot of Boundless Way Zen in Worcester, Mass, who thanks to Jeannie, I met her last summer. We had a really nice connection. So now I'm working with her, and we were discussing, this topic came up of how to work with students on koans. And my question to her was, how do you negotiate, how do you find the balance between what some call in Zen the granting way versus the withholding way? How much do you reveal to a student, and how much do you allow them to go through their own process, even if it takes a bit longer and it's a struggle for them? So I was talking to her about finding this balance, because in Zen practice, so those of you that are relatively new to this, what Andy was doing outside is what we call Daisan or Dokusan in the Zen tradition. And this is a method of meeting with the teacher so that teacher can help you untangle the tangle. Mm-hmm. Okay? This is essentially what we're doing. And I really wanted to hear Melissa's approach with this. And teachers' approaches vary, as many as there are teachers, but it runs the range of you might present an answer or some insight to the teacher, and maybe the teacher views this as not quite there or incorrect or whatever, and the bell rings, dismissed. So that would be what we would call the withholding way. In other words, come back to me when you have something different, okay? I view my other teacher, Sensei Al, as being quite liberal and quite giving. So maybe a student presents to the teacher something that's moving in a direction, and the teacher will say, well, what about this? And then, okay, well, what about this? And let's take a moment and sit together and really feel this. What does this mean to you? So this sort of interaction that's a little more liberal. I suspect I'm on the liberal side, and I suspect Andy is a little bit tougher with the koans. And this is why I think it's so great to have multiple teachers to work with, so you experience this range and see how it helps your practice. At Boundless Way Zen, there are 10 teachers, 10 fully transmitted Dharma teachers. So I think there's great value in experiencing these different approaches. But the whole point of this was Melissa expressed it this way. She said, I think of it as pulling threads. which I thought was wonderful because it immediately brought up this image of a student in front of me, which, by the way, I'm looking at a version of myself. We always view it this way. We're the same. So a student in front of me, or a version of myself, in a tangle, like a ball of yarn, just trying to figure it out, right? And getting themselves tighter and tighter, or maybe looser and then tighter in a different way, like this. And Andy has probably seen this, there's one little yarn poking out. And then a skilled teacher will see that and go, oh, just a little tug, just enough to loosen it up a bit. And then we have the space to experience something a little bit differently, maybe. So bows to Melissa. I'll thank her next time I speak to her for giving me this visuals. Because for me, we can talk about it all day long, but there's something about a metaphor like this that's way more direct, a metaphor of a ball of yarn or a loose thread or something like this, that brings it more into the realm of a body experience, because I think we've all felt this in our bodies, this experience of being tangled up and then maybe loosening up just a little bit. Which kind of brings me to the next thing that this brought up for me in the past few days, and that is what they call at Zen Mountain Monastery body practice. And they view it as an instrumental part of their practice of Zen. And body practice is precisely what it says, working with the body in a way that reveals its nature to our minds, I guess you could say. This could be a yoga practice, this could be Tai Chi, this could be running, this could be anything that you do with a physical activity that brings you into a state of awareness of the body, of this expression. So for me, I have a daily yoga practice. I practice 5 days a week, and there are times I know that my yoga practice gets to things that my meditation practice would never get to, and vice versa. And it's a very direct, for me, it provides very direct access to that tangle and a very immediate release of that tangle that's quite satisfying in a way that, again, talking about it just wouldn't do. So any type of body practice is wonderful for this. There are times when that body tangle can't resolve itself by my own doing, in which case we have Dr. Sun and we have Tony, who I found through two people here. So we have wonderful healers who are skilled, who train their entire lives to assist other people in untangling that physical tangle. So Dr. Sun is a local acupuncturist, and she's a bit
She's Chinese.
She's a bit direct and rough. She doesn't waste any time. She gets in there with those needles, and my goodness, there have been times where I've been struggling with something physical, and only that type of direct, no nonsense approach is what healed me. She's healed me many times. And I don't entirely understand what acupuncture does, but it's certainly the sort of untangling that I never would have been able to do on my own. When I'm feeling not so urgent and not so brave, I go to Tony, who, and this fascinates me, Tony does cranial sacral therapy. They should be paying me for advertising.
You should at least get one free trip.
So Tony Hansen does cranial sacral therapy and myofascia release. Who has heard of myofascia release? So the way I understand it, and this is a very rudimentary understanding, but very Zen, I think. Myofascia, to me, is like a sponge, and it's this network of soft connective tissues all through the body. And what happens is, if we're injured or stressed or whatever is happening, the sponge is like this, and it's maybe too full of whatever. And this skilled myofascial release person very gently has ways of just basically squeezing out the sponge and letting it open up again. So what does all this have to do with Zen practice? This is a good question. So we have this feeling like, okay, I'm in this tangle. I realize that. And I have to practice to undo the tangle. But that happens, and then it happens again and again and again. And I think the practice is not to come to some place where we don't get ourselves into a tangle anymore, but to fully embrace and love the process itself, because the process itself, I've come to see, is quite beautiful. It's really amazing to see how the body does this, how the mind does this, and to see how we can allow this process to happen. And it's not so much a doing as a watching and an allowing, and what we call in Zen non-doing. This space between doing and not doing is what we call in Zen non-doing. I'll try this in a different way. And Dogen uses this. It's not thinking, and it's not thinking. It's non-thinking. So talk about a tangle. You can work with this over the next few days. See what this comes up, what this brings up for you. So what I wanted to end with, and I'm getting a little bit gimmicky this morning, but it's kind of fun. These are, I'll pass one in each direction.
Oh.
And these, I always get these out at parties, and inevitably, it's more or less the same thing with everybody I hand this to, except for my boss, because he's weird like that. But what people typically do is we'll take this little puzzle and just fuss with the, especially at a party, absentmindedly, just, you know, right? It'll start to drive them crazy. Essentially, they're trying to untangle the tangle with the same hands that created the tangle, which never works. And then, now and then, they'll realize what they're doing, and guess what? They'll just stop. Just stop and look. And it's amazing how this shifts the process. They could fuss like this with it for an hour. And often they do. And then they'll stop and look at it and really slow down and observe. And you can actually see the shift in their body language. It's really neat. And then all of a sudden they see how it works. I won't be able to do it now because everybody's watching me. But all of a sudden they'll see how it works and that the tangle is untangled. So I'll pass these around. And we'll see who untangles that.
All my egos are involved in doing that.
So thank you for being here on a Sunday morning. Any thoughts or questions? We open this up for a discussion.
But I had an experience when I first sat down this morning of something that caused a tangle, okay? And I recognized that I was in this, that it was happening, and I, you know, just let it smooth out, you know? And later on, I was actually discussing with Andy about, you know, that experience of what that feels like, and then the smoothing out, and I ended up describing it as a when you take a piece of paper and you crumble it, mm-hmm. I mean, not crumble it, but you squeeze it into a ball, you know, and then, you know, you can undo that, you know, you can lay that piece of paper down and smooth it out. Mm-hmm. And
but the creases are still there.
The creases are still there. And I got to the point where there's the beauty in the creases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that, again, it's going to get scrunched into another ball. And it's going to get smoothed out. And there's going to be...
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I wasn't listening to you, that's why.
That's smart. That was much better than anything I can say. And so that, you know, every time it's going to, I'm going to get the ball, right? It's going to, that piece of paper is going to turn to the ball, it will get smoothed out, and the creases will be there. And I had this, like, vision of myself on my deathbed with all my wrinkles, or all my creases, you know, and I was just smoothed out. It was, that's all I can say.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And I think at some point we realize there's equal value in the crumpled up ball and the released piece of paper. They're both equal in value. We in Zen practice, we really emphasize this understanding that we don't favor any one state over any other. And in ways, we learn to love that, because the crumpled up, we love many parts of us love this, right? Otherwise, why would we keep doing it? So there's always value to be found. Thank you for sharing that.
I guess that we all have crinkles, a great metaphor. As I get older, my insomnia becomes much more intense. And so I have this big block of time at night or early morning to fill. And it's a journey. And the insomniac, you have rumination. You ruminate. So naturally here I've spent years meditating, so I'll meditate. Well, that works, the meditation works, but the insomnia continues. So then I shift to my yoga practice. And then I'm shifting to part two, yoga. And sometimes that works. And sometimes that doesn't work. Anyway, this goes on and on. So, I mean, I have an ongoing practice half the night. And with little resolution, until there's a point of somebody just letting go. And when I let go and stop trying, that's when sleep occurs. It's the letting go process for me, for all of us. One aspect of helping letting go, which you alluded before to, and I think when you're talking about the physical, or even the Koenigs practice, is changing the frame. So the frame is first meditate so I can be in a right place to sleep. Then change the frame to exercise. But as long as I have in the background a goal, it doesn't work. It's when I change the frame and then forget that I changed the frame.
This is, I think, brings up a wonderful point of having a goal in practice, because we all fall into this trap. I'm going to sit down in order to relax. I'm going to meditate in order to become a better person or whatever it is. And ultimately, all this is doing is we're moving outward towards some imagined version of ourselves. Dogen's, I just said this quote the other night, take the backward step and shine the light inward. So it's this taking of a backward step. This is the only place, hopefully not the only place, but a very conducive place for not having a goal. It's the only place where you're allowed to just be whatever you are right now. And we give ourselves that permission here. And as a group, this is what we're offering to each other. Anne can just be whatever Anne is right now. And we love Anne, however she shows up. Right? And it's the same with everybody here. No goal. You don't have to be any certain way. But it's really hard when we've been trained our entire lives to always be moving towards that next thing. Thank you. Lacey.
Yeah, Lacey. Kind of bouncing off what you were just saying, I'm reading a book right now called A Buddha Walks Into a Bar. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Winsler.
Yeah, Winsler. And I'm about like 3/4 of the way through it. And in the book, he talks about expectations and basically that you're kind of not supposed to have expectations. And I was kind of curious what your thoughts were on that, because in the book, it basically says that you're supposed to ride the wave of your life instead of expecting things from it. And I was just interested to see what you thought. Because it kind of bounced off what you guys were talking about, I think. Maybe I'm way off base, but...
So I'll answer your question with another question to the whole group. So to the whole group, how many times have you had an expectation about something, about work, about a relationship? And how many times has that that thing turned out how you expected it to be? And here's another question. How many times has the experience of having those expectations, how many times has that altered the way you navigated this situation? Maybe in not such a skillful way. Right? So we all investigate this for our lives, and for most people, for a lot of people, I'll say it's not that easy of a lesson to learn. It takes a lot of attention and a lot of practice. So, thank you. So, thank you. We'll end here and we'll close with the 4 vows of the Bodhisattva.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable.